Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Knowledge Check Podcast, a D&D 5th edition discussion podcast. I am one of your hosts, Eric.
And I am your other host, Philip.
And welcome to the 8th episode of the Knowledge Check, where tonight we are going to be returning to a episode type that we've done a couple times before. We ventured off a little bit, but felt like it was time to come back. Tonight we are going to be discussing the Paladin.
Hooray!
Lawful good doesn't mean lawful nice.
And in 5th edition, you don't have to be lawful good.
Yeah. So, yes, we're going to be diving into that class, doing what we typically do, all culminating in a build-off where Philip and I will present a paladin that we have lovingly built up to level 5 for your enjoyment and criticisms. So, anyway, before we get into that, obviously, we need to do the social media plug. So, Philip, why don't you tell the people where they can find us?
They can find us just about on all social media. We are at the Geek Pantheon on Twitter, on Instagram, on Google Plus, on Facebook, at the Geek Pantheon. We are at, also, if you want to email us, you can email us at our Gmail account, thegeekpantheon@gmail.com.
Yes, indeed. We are also proudly part of the D20 Radio Network, a wonderful podcasting network for all of your gaming goodness. And we want to tell you about another podcast on our network. And that is one that we've told you about before, but maybe this is your first time listening to this podcast. And so this will be new for you. But we wanted to tell you about the Order 66 podcast. Order 66 podcast is dedicated to all things Star Wars Fantasy Flight Games role-playing system. They break down specializations, DMing tips, player tips. The most recent episode, titled Gone in 60 Parsecs, they cover chase scenes pretty in-depth. And it's a really good episode even for our listeners here that maybe don't play the Star Wars system, but you just like some general tips on chase sequences from three guys that have been GMing a variety of game systems over the years. Go give it a listen. I listened to it and they had some great advice that is easily pulled into D&D. So yes, definitely go check them out over at d20radio.com in the podcast section. And while you're over at d20radio.com, check out the main page for one of the best little gaming blogs on the internet, with articles going up daily covering all game systems. There are some writers over there that do some wonderful work with D&D, so definitely go check them out over there. So now, let's get into the news, shall we?
Sure.
So, no Unearthed Arcana. It's finally happened. Play. Do you have a eulogy, Philip, that you'd like to recite?
Give us more. I like rules.
Yes. We did get an exciting announcement, though, 2 weeks ago after we had recorded episode 7 that we wanted to let you all know about. In case you haven't heard, if you don't really follow Wizards of the Coast that closely, you may not have heard about the Stream of Annihilation, which is a big event they're doing June 2nd and 3rd, where they've gotten a lot of D&D streamers up to their headquarters, and they're going to be streaming D&D 24 hours a day for 2 days straight. I guess I could have said 48 hours straight and just made that sentence simpler, but we're already past it. So, but they're going to have people from Critical Role, Maze Arcana, just all kinds of D&D streaming channels.
I think they just added Girls Guts Glory.
Okay. And exciting announcement. We are going... No, not really. That would be...
Boy. Wouldn't that be something?
Matt Colville, if any of you have seen his work on YouTube, is going to be up there playing some D&D. But the big thing, the big reason to watch this, for those of you that maybe aren't that into watching D&D streams, they are going to be announcing the next storyline in D&D at Stream of Annihilation. So if you want to find that out before anyone else, definitely go check out that stream. They're going to be dropping that on us, which will be exciting. I mean, Storm's...
And it is going to be Eberron.
Well, that's not true, as nice as that would be. So, yes.
Well, you got to be that way, Eric.
I'm just
be that way.
I'm just a
glass half empty guy. could be.
It certainly could be. Yes. So you're telling me there's a chance. but yes, that is really the only news to come out of Wizards of the Coast in the past 2 weeks. Shockingly enough, we haven't gotten any new sage advice or unearthed arcana, like we said. So,
did we have a new dragon plus?
Nope, we covered last okay. episode. If you haven't checked that out yet, and you have Tales from the Awning Portal, definitely go check that out. It dives into each of the adventures very deeply, but. With the lack of news, I think we're going to hit the main topic in under 10 minutes this week, Philip.
Ooh.
It's shocking.
I don't know what to do. You want to just talk for a while, man?
Yeah. How's your weekend been?
It's good.
No, we won't make you all suffer through listening to how utterly boring Philip and I's lives are outside of this podcast. At least mine, anyway.
I got an 8-year-old in my house, man.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey, I have two dogs. keep me on my toes. They really taught me patience, you know? Feel like a whole new man. Anyway, let's get into the main topic of discussion for tonight, the Paladin. So, first things first, we have to answer that eternal question, who is a Paladin? So, Philip, what are some pros for you of the Paladin? Why should people look at this class? What makes it interesting?
I think what makes it interesting is, well, mechanically, the Paladin is not necessarily going to jump out to everyone. I mean, it's got a lot of fun mechanics, but its mechanics don't necessarily define what's fun to play about it. There are other classes out there who I would argue have more obvious narrative interest built into their mechanics. But what's neat about the Paladin, especially the 5th edition Paladin, is how much more open it is than you kind of expect the Paladin to be. I think especially if you played in Pathfinder or 3rd edition, you're expecting a Paladin with very, very strict limitations on what you can do with it. Old editions, like in Pathfinder and 3rd edition, I know in Pathfinder, I might be wrong about 3rd edition, but I think so. You had to be lawful good.
Yeah.
You had one alignment that you could have. Now, you got a very powerful character for that limitation.
Yeah.
But that placed a very strict limitation on your role playing. And that was something that could be fun to a lot of people. And that version of the Paladin is still here. In fact, multiple versions of that version of the Paladin are still in 5th edition. But that's no longer the only thing that the Paladin has. This Paladin is much more open. And so the thing that makes the Paladin interesting is you have the opportunity to play whatever character you want, but have the role-playing experience of being bound by an oath.
Yeah.
From which you draw your power. The Paladin is... Paladin is not a cleric.
There's very warlocky, almost.
Yes, it is almost more comparable to the warlock than the cleric. That's a good comparison. There's not necessarily a god or an entity that you swore allegiance to, or that called you. That could be it, but it's not necessarily it. You've sworn an oath to an ideal, and your dedication to that is what gives you your magical abilities. In addition, you're also martially adept. You're a couple steps below a fighter as far as your martial capabilities. So it's much more open than the Paladin used to be. And so if you like that idea of a warrior with a cause, like with a strong cause that defines who he is, then the Paladin is is very good. And I feel like that archetype, warrior with a cause, is extremely versatile.
Yeah. From a more mechanic focused standpoint, in terms of talking about the paladin, it is a, I mean, especially starting out at level one, it is a martial centric character. If you take away all of the stuff you literally just talked about, because
yeah,
you don't get the benefits of your oath until level three. You should obviously be thinking about what your oath is going to be, or building up to that from a story standpoint, so that once you hit level three, it's not just like, oh, well, I take Oath of Vengeance and there I'm done. But you look at the paladin when you go to make it, it has all the same proficiencies in terms of weapons and armor as the fighter. It has the same hit die as the fighter. I mean, it's just once you get up into those higher level stuff, you lose some of that martial capability in favor of the divine stuff that you get.
But, yeah, well, and I mean, early on, there's some distinction even before your oath. For example, paladin starts to pick up divine smite instead of the fighter's ability to act an extra time, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the beginnings of your ability to channel divine power are there. But what I think is kind of cool about the way they did this, by putting off your oath, it's kind of like your apprenticing.
Yeah,
you're learning to be a paladin. I had a player in my game multi-class into paladin, and he treated it that way. The first two levels he took of paladin were when his character was first starting to have this sort of narrative change in his worldview through some things that happened in the game that I won't bore you with. So he treated those first two levels as sort of his character exploring this new world and learning that there were other kinds of magic that he could wield. And then at third level, narratively, he decided it was at this point that his character was confident enough that he would take that oath. And so he took his third level in Paladin last time they leveled up and took the oath, I think, of the Ancients.
Okay.
So it adds an interesting ability to sort of define the narrative progression of your character by the mechanics of leveling up. And anytime leveling up, which is usually a very non-narrative concept,
yeah,
serves the narrative, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, and what you also get in those early levels of Paladin, because you are so capable martially, but you also get, like you said, Divine Smite, Lay on Hands, Divine Sense. You create this very self-reliant character. The Paladin, yeah, I would say, is the most viable solo character if you were ever going to run a solo D&D campaign. Just because you do have that durability mixed with the capacity to heal yourself and good damage output. And so looking at it in MMO terms, it kind of fits that it's not the best at any of those three things, but it definitely can serve those three functions.
Yeah.
And Philip kind of touched on the narrative stuff with the built-in narrative hooks. And you may not be serving a god. It may not be clearly defined. If you want to play it like that, kind of warlocky, let your DM know so they can be working on it on their end. But generally speaking, as a paladin, you're going to want to define who you're serving. It doesn't tell you to pick a god. Your god doesn't affect your abilities or anything. But from a narrative standpoint, it's a good idea to at least pick a church that you're serving.
I would say also, I mean, if you don't know when you start playing the character, that's perfectly fine. I wouldn't expect one of my players to know what they're going to do at every level.
Yeah.
But if you already have a strong inclination towards one or another of the oaths, talk to your GM about that, because my player did, when he told me he was thinking about multi-classing into Paladin. We talked for a little bit about what he thought was cool about that and what he thought his character found appealing about that, and I was able to work a lot of things into the story that I probably wouldn't have done if he hadn't talked to me about it, because there wouldn't have been any reason to.
Yeah.
But because we talked about it and worked it out, it allowed his progression into Paladin to be, I think, really rewarding narratively, both for him and the other players.
Mm-hmm. The last thing, and I kind of touched on it when talking about it in MMO terms, but last pro for the Paladin, lots of utility with this character. You can really go in a thousand different directions with it, in terms of what you want to do, how you want to play, more martial heavy, more caster heavy, things like that. Yeah, I mean, it's a really good...
The spells are a pretty good mix, too. I mean, you don't get very many, but you get some buffing spells, you get some damage spells, depending on your oath. Your oath gives you an additional spell list. You get some healing. So, I mean, I honestly didn't realize this until we were in the middle of the game, and my wife, who plays a paladin, cast this spell. You get Revivify as a paladin. Mm-hmm. Like, you can raise the dead.
Yep.
Which is, you know, we often think about that as specific to the cleric or the druid or one of those main caster divine classes, but you get a lot of options.
Yeah. A couple of cons to the Paladin, just some issues in the 5th edition version of the Paladin that I have seen. Firstly, charisma saves are pretty much useless. I've never asked somebody to make a charisma save ever.
I think I have, but I can't remember what spell it was for or what ability it was for.
It's very rare. That's the big thing mechanically that I don't like about the Paladin. And I get that it allows a lot more flexibility on the Dungeon Master's side in terms of throwing saves at your players, but I pretty much stick with Dex, Wisdom, and Constitution as the three saves that I make people do. Maybe occasionally Strength if a bad guy's trying to grapple them, but then again, they have the option to do a Dex save anyway. And Philip is one of my players, can attest to the fact that I do not ask for Dex, Con, or Wisdom saves. I still ask for Reflex, Fortitude.
It very much depends on your table, because if most of the time where you make a save, it's just against spells, that's almost always going to be Dexterity, Constitution, Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a couple of intelligence ones, but, and I know there are a couple strength ones, cause you make strength saving throws with lightning lure.
Yeah.
But again, mostly it's Constitution, Wisdom, or Dexterity. The other saves happen more often in contests or narrative devices. So,
yeah. And Philip kind of touched on this at the top of the episode when I made my lawful good joke, but I have experienced this with players very frequently when they're playing a paladin. Sometimes it can feel constraining from a role-playing standpoint, especially if your oath that you've taken really plays into not a direct alignment, but just that sort of heavily suggested alignment. If you took Oath of Devotion, that is kind of clearly the lawful good paladin archetype that we've seen, and so it's not as constrained as like Pathfinder or older editions of D&D, and it shouldn't be constraining even in those editions, but I feel like it happens frequently enough at enough tables that it's worth addressing.
I think what causes this, and we can talk about it a little bit, but I think what causes this is one of a few things. The most common is, I think, that it happens when the player and the GM have a different understanding about what following a paladin oath means. I think that's a big deal, especially in older systems where alignment was the big defining factor. It happened when what it meant to be lawful good was different to you and to your dungeon master. So some things like that are worth defining with your DM. Another thing that causes this is not having a clear idea of the tone of your story.
Mm-hmm.
It could be really fun to play a lawful good paladin of devotion in Gotham City. It could be. That could be a really fun experience. It could also be really unpleasant and irritating.
Yeah.
And it just depends on whether your expectations were realistic when you decided to do that. Mm. And so that I think happens a lot too. The last one, and I think this is not very common, but I have seen it happen. I think occasionally DMs feel like they are providing good role-playing moments when actually what they're doing is torturing their paladin.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a temptation because, hey, there's this person and they have this oath to remain lawful good. So I'm going to provide them with the opportunity to test that.
Yeah.
But what it can become is I'm going to, at every opportunity, make you choose between saving your friends and doing the right thing.
The key is moderation.
Yeah.
If you're going to do stuff like that, yeah.
Not every moment needs to be a BioWare decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as a dungeon master who still plays with alignments, I know a lot of DMs, especially with 5e's lack of reliance on it, have just thrown alignments out the window. Just leave that part of your character sheet blank. Nobody cares. I still play with alignments. And the reasoning behind me playing for alignments, and if you're a dungeon master playing with alignments, maybe this advice can help you. The alignment is on the player's character sheet for a reason. It is for players, not for dungeon masters. I view it as a way for players to kind of quantify their player or their players to quantify their character's mental state and moral compass in a very simple set of letters. And then have that be a reference point. I don't use it to, like Philip said, torture my players of like, you're lawful good. Or if you have somebody playing a chaotic neutral character and they acquiesce to the demands of an authority figure without putting up a fight, the DM going, well, you're not really playing your alignment that well. And it's like, no, just don't do that. But yes, 5e kind of did away with alignment, so this shouldn't be an issue. And the oaths are, I would say, nebulous enough to where you do possess some wiggle room within them. Even something like Oath of Devotion. It's a lot more, I guess the best way to put it is when you have the alignment lawful good, that seems like a very static thing. There is an alignment that is lawful good, and these actions fall within it, and it's not relative. It is absolute. Whereas these oaths, to me, come across as a lot more relative to who your oath is to. If you have the Oath of Devotion to one god, that may mean something different compared to another god. And so it gives you that wiggle room, which is why I say look at the gods and kind of pick one that lines up with the way you want to play and have that be the god that you declare your oath to. Or fey, if you're doing the ancients, or God knows what if you're playing the vengeance oath.
I have an answer for you when we get to our build off.
Or going down to even the unearthed arcana options of conquest and treachery, then you're dealing with devils and demons. But anyway, we will get to that. So, building a paladin. Primary stats. Once again, all of this is if you were optimizing, just kind of that. If you want to play a character that functions at the highest level, none of this is set in stone, but primary stat, strength or charisma, depending on where your focus is going to be. If you're going to be a paladin who focuses on casting spells, then charisma is going to be your primary. If you're going to be focused more on the martial, or I would say even if you're going to be doing a healthy balance of casting and martial, still go with strength as your primary stat. Now, having said that, when we get to the build off, I will show you a paladin whose strength is his dump stat. So that will be interesting. That's really with the primary stat. That's where you're going to want to look is strength or charisma. The other stat should be your secondary. So strength is number one, make charisma number two, vice versa. Yeah. And then the rest is based on party needs/role playing desires. If you just don't have a good idea, in either of those regards, Constitution is a good way to
go. Yeah. That's going to be your stereotype.
Yeah.
It is possible to do a dexterity based paladin instead of strength. You could do finesse weapons. It's not very possible to build a ranged paladin yet within the rules as written.
You just, wouldn't get to use divine smite or
some of your spells.
Yeah.
A lot of the paladin's special stuff special damaging things rely on melee attacks. And so while I personally think the concept of a ranged paladin is really cool, and if a player came to me and really wanted to do that, I might work with them on that and find some ways to balance out allowing those to be done with ranged weapons. As the rules are written, it's pretty hard to do an archer paladin and get everything out of it that you could.
And the last thing that you're going to do when you start building your paladin, like we said before, and if you don't have a good idea, that's perfectly fine. You can wait. But I would recommend going ahead and defining your oath, because that will be a good thing to kind of inform your character's actions and their path leading into level 3.
The nice thing about this is the player's handbook and the Unearthed Arcana have given you lots of guidelines on this narratively. Mm-hmm. Each of the oaths in the player's handbook has an example of the different tenets of the oath. So your job is, it could be to make up the thing wholesale in conjunction with your DM. Obviously that's fine. But if you're not wanting to go that far, all it really requires for you is, what do those things mean in the context of your world and in the context of your character?
Yeah. So let's talk about the various sacred oaths, Philip.
Okay.
So you want to tackle Oath of Devotion?
Yeah. So the Oath of Devotion, as we've said, is the stereotypical paladin. The flavor text, the Oath of Devotion binds a paladin to the loftiest ideals of justice, virtue, and order, sometimes called cavaliers, white knights, or holy warriors. I highly recommend you avoid the term white knight. These paladins meet the ideal of the knight in shining armor. So if you're looking to be the stereotypical paladin, the lawful good servant of a deity who battles for truth, justice, and I was going to come up with a nation in one of the D&D settings.
And you failed.
And I failed. Anyway, and whatever, all that other stuff. Then the devotion paladin is probably your easiest way to go. There are some other options that have come since in the Unearthed Arcana and some of the other things. So there are other options, but devotion is the obvious one. Tenets are honesty, courage, compassion, honor, duty. The spells you get all serve that. There are things like protection from evil and sanctuary, restoration, zone of truth, beacon of hope.
Yeah.
So you get, you're the beacon of radiant awesome. You also get some cool damage stuff. I mean, one of your high level extra spell is Flame Strike, which is a really good spell. So you get a lot of stuff like that. The special channel divinities you get is you can do a sacred weapon, which is to add your charisma modifier to attack rolls made by a weapon, which is solid, especially if you have a high charisma.
And also important is that your weapon becomes magical for the duration of that as well.
Yes, that is also very relevant, especially when you get into the mid-level stuff and you start running into the monsters who have the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have a limited number of channel divinities per day, so these are things that use that. But
yeah,
and then you have Turn the Unholy as an action. Present your holy symbol. Each fiend or undead that you can see or hear within 30 feet must make a wisdom saving throw or be turned. So essentially you get the cleric's turn undead ability, except yours is a little bit cooler. Additionally, you get an aura of devotion that means that your allies allies within 10 feet of you, that's limit, can't be charmed. That will increase to 30 feet when you're level 18. And you get purity of spirit, where you're always under the effect of a protection from evil and good spell, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's level 15. And then your capstone ability for the Oath of Devotion is that at level 20, you emit a holy nimbus. You can emanate an aura of sunlight for 1 minute. Bright light shines from you in a 30-foot radius, dim light 30 feet beyond that. Whenever an enemy creature starts its turn in the bright light, it takes 10 radiant damage.
Yeah.
In addition, for the duration, you have advantage on the saving throws against spells by fiends or undead. So if you are going into a campaign that's going to heavily feature undead things or demons, the Oath of Devotion has a lot to recommend itself.
Mm-hmm.
You are truth, justice, and all that good stuff, but at the same time, you are a beacon of destruction if you want to be.
Yeah.
So, and again, this does not, there is no alignment requirement for the Oath of Devotion. So if you want to do the Oath of Devotion but don't want to be lawful good, there's room for that. Mm-hmm. You just need to make the tenets of that oath fit within your character's worldview.
Yeah.
So, moving on, one of the ones I think is most interesting is the next one in the player's handbook, which is the Oath of the Ancients. And this is sort of a mixing of the druid and the paladin.
Mm-hmm.
You become a knight in service of...
It mentions fae as being a possible option for what you serve, but then also your channel divinity targets fae creatures, so that's a little... confusing.
Well, but it's not, because there are nasty fae and good fae. That's a big part of the Feywild culture, is that this conflict between the Seelie and the Unseelie court.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a campaign that is in the Feywild, or you're a character from the Feywild, that this is a really cool option for you. Every time I build a character, there's one part of my brain that wants to build an Eladrin Oath of the Ancient Paladin.
Yeah.
Because I like the Eladrin and I like fae things.
Mm-hmm.
And once I find myself playing in a campaign where the campaign is right for that, I probably will do it, because I really like this one. Tenets are kindle the light, shelter the light, preserve your own light, and be the light. Basically, you serve
the light.
Yes, but that means not just like goodness and truth. And you're not just, it's not just the devotion by another name. It's more about beauty, especially natural beauty. So you're, it's a more abstract idea of goodness. What's good about the world, instead of what's good about people's behavior.
Yeah.
I guess. You get some cool druidy spells. So if you like the more nature based spells, this is a way to get those without playing a druid. I don't mean that there's anything wrong with playing a druid, but I don't like full caster classes, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of spells.
Yeah.
It's so much spells. You get ensnaring strike, speak with animals, moonbeam, misty step, which is really fun, short range teleport, plant growth, protection from energy, ice storm, stone skin, commune with nature, and tree stride. So you get some really cool ability to play with nature.
Yeah.
So if your entire campaign is taking place in the Underdark, I have a hard time recommending this one.
Yeah, that'd be a bummer.
Or all in a desert or something like that. So, or it's post-apocalyptic and all the trees have been blasted. you do need some plants to make some of this work.
Yes.
Your channel divinity is your nature's wrath, and you can invoke primeval forces against a foe. You can cause spectral vines to spring up and reach for a creature within 10 feet of you, which will restrain it if it fails its strength or dexterity saving throw.
Yes, I saw that.
But that's its choice. So if it doesn't have to make a strength saving throw. Additionally, you can turn the faithless, which is where you target a fae or fiend. So mm-hmm. you get a turning ability again, but not against undead, instead against fiends and fae. I like that they put fiends in there, because, you know, it's a very specific campaign where you face a lot of evil fae.
Yeah. Yeah.
But demons, you know, demons show up. All right. Then the special abilities here, you have the Aura of Warding, where you are.
It's pretty awesome.
It is. You and creatures within 10 feet of you have resistance to spell damage.
Yeah.
All of it. All spell damage. That's very strong. That's probably the strongest aura.
Mm-hmm.
15th, you are an undying sentinel. When you're reduced to 0 hit points, you're not killed and can drop to 1 hit point instead. This is once per long rest, but still, that's extremely awesome.
And you stop aging, which is neat.
Yes. And then at level 20, your capstone is you can assume the form of an ancient force of nature, taking the appearance you choose. For example, you might turn green or bark-like. The effects of this are that at the start of your turn, each of your turns, you regain 10 hit points. Whenever you cast a paladin spell that has a cast time of one action, it's a bonus action instead. And enemy creatures within 10 feet of you have disadvantage on saving throws against your spells and channel divinity. So that's a pretty excellent capstone. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned some of the classes have kind of a lackluster capstone abilities. Paladin is not one of those classes. Paladin's capstone abilities are pretty excellent. You really want to take all 20 levels.
You're not going to want a multi-class.
Yeah. So that's pretty excellent. I really like that one. It's got a lot of cool flavor, but the mechanics are also excellent. And anytime those two things combine, it's kind of a sweet spot for me. Probably for everyone, because this is a role-playing game. But, you know. Lastly, in the player's handbook, we have the Oath of Vengeance. If you, as I did, and I know Eric did, because he played one, if you liked The Avenger in 4th edition, good news, everyone. It's here.
Yeah.
It's in the player's handbook. Except you get to wear heavy armor, which the old Avenger did not.
That's very true.
Yeah, the Oath of Vengeance is basically just the Avenger from 4th edition, turned into a subclass instead of a full-on class. They're sometimes called Avengers or Dark Knights. Their own purity is not as important as delivering justice. So in case Dark Knight didn't clue you in, if you have been wanting to play Batman, here's one way you could do that.
Yes, yes, indeed. Just
flavor all your spells as gadgets.
Yeah, exactly. The first tenet, though, I feel like you would have a problem with immediately based on our last session of playing Eberron Renewed.
Beric would have a problem. Philip doesn't have any problem. I played a character who could have kept all of these tenets in our long campaign. Jack would have been all about this, other than the paladin part. But yes, tenets of vengeance, fight the greater evil, no mercy for the wicked, by any means necessary, and restitution. If my foes wreak ruin in this world, it is because I failed to stop them, and I must help those harmed by their misdeeds. I like that addition.
Yeah.
Because you begin to present this idea of the gravelly voiced, rough, brooding, badass anti-hero, right? And while you could play that, one of your tenets is also you also have to fix the destruction.
Yeah.
You don't just come in and kill the bad guy. Like, after you've dragged General Zod through all of the skyscrapers in Metropolis, you have to go back and help rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you could have taken the fight out into outer space and been fine.
No, what you do is immediately after the fight, you stand amongst the smoke and wreckage and you make out with your new girlfriend. That's what you do, Philip.
Because that is really what the people of Metropolis need. You're giving them hope, Eric.
And your girlfriend, who's just been through a near-death experience, is totally going to be down to do that.
Yes, that's what everyone wants after a near-death experience.
Anyway.
Sorry, tangent. This obviously, if we were playing an MMO, this would be your DPS build for a paladin. Your extra spells are cool. They're Bane. You get Hunter's Mark.
Yeah.
Which is really great. Like, that's a ranger only spell. So to get it in a different class is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Hold person, Misty Step again, which I love. Haste, protection from evil, banishment, dimension door, hold monster, and scrying. So if you want to build, there's a lot of things you could build with this. And that's one of the things I like about it is if you want to do Batman, if you want to do a 4th edition Avenger, if you want to build a Witcher character, I know we said the Monster Hunter was your go-to thing with that, but this works pretty well for that as well.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of cool options here. Your channel divinity, you get Abjure Enemy, which you may remember from the Avenger from 4th edition. You utter a prayer of denouncement, and the creature has to make a wisdom saving throw. And on a failed save, it is frightened for 1 minute or until it takes any damage.
Yep.
So, and then you get Vow of Enmity, which is exactly an Avenger ability.
Mm-hmm.
You can utter a Vow of Enmity against a creature. Using your channel divinity, you gain advantage on attack rolls against that creature for 1 minute or until it drops to 0 hit points or falls unconscious.
Yep. And I love that they carried that thing over, because back in 4th edition, Vow of Enmity gave you advantage when that wasn't like a thing in 4th edition. And so
I
remember so many people I played with just getting frustrated at my ability to roll 2d20 on attack rolls and take the higher roll. It was just like, this doesn't seem fair.
I did let you do that.
Yeah. I enjoyed the flavor of the Avenger, but that was during my optimizing phase where I was like, well, obviously I'm going to play the class that lets me roll twice on attack rolls.
Well, the similarities don't stop there. You get Relentless Avenger at level 7. Your supernatural focus helps you close off a foe's retreat. When you hit a creature with an opportunity attack, like, say, the target of your oath at enmity runs away from you, you can move up to half your speed immediately after that attack and as part of the same reaction. This move does not provoke opportunity attacks. 15th level, you get Soul of Vengeance. Again, the authority with which you speak your Vow of Enmity gives you greater power over your foe. When a creature under the effect of your Vow of Enmity makes an attack, you can use your reaction to make a melee attack against that creature.
Yep.
If it's within range,
and
obviously.
Then the big one.
Avenging Angel.
You're going to want to take all 20, folks.
Yep. So you undergo a transformation, and for 1 hour, you gain the following benefits. Wings sprout from your back and grant you a fly speed of 60 feet. Double your normal movement, probably. You emanate an aura of menace in a 30-foot radius. The first time any enemy creature enters the aura or starts its turn there during the battle, the creature must make a wisdom saving throw or become frightened of you for 1 minute or until it takes damage. Attack rolls against frightened creatures have advantage.
Everybody gets advantage.
Yay. So even just right out of the player's handbook, before we get to the Unearthed Arcana or the Sword Coast Adventures Guide, you got some really cool options.
Yeah. But speaking of the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, they provided a unique sacred oath for the Forgotten Realms, obviously adaptable to other settings. But this is the Oath of the Crown. So very embroiled in like royal politics, if that's where your campaign is headed, or that's just the background of your paladin, this is a good sacred oath to take. They are watchful guardians on the wall, standing against chaotic tides of barbarians. They are often known as guardians, exemplars, or sentinels. They are generally an order of a knighthood in service to a sovereign or a nation, and their oath is part of their admission to those ranks. So your tenets are law, loyalty, courage, responsibility. Very much the knight. Whereas the devotion gives you some wiggle room for being that Ronin style traveling and adventure. This very much is you are beholden to a nation. So some of the spells that you get: command, compelled duel, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Warding Bond, Zone of Truth, Spirit Guardians, Banishment, your Channel Divinity, Champion Challenge. So you issue a challenge that compels other creatures to do battle with you. Each creature of your choice that you can see within 30 feet of you must make a wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, that creature cannot willingly move more than 30 feet away from you. This effect ends on the creature if you are incapacitated or die. And then also there is Turn the Tide. So as a bonus action, you can bolster injured creatures. Each creature of your choice that can hear you within 30 feet regains 1d6 plus your charisma modifier hit points, which is pretty great. If it has no more than half its hit points. So they have to be at under half, bloodied, to borrow a 4E term. then you have Divine Allegiance. So creatures within 5 feet of you take damage. You can use your reaction to substitute your own health for that of the target. Unyielding Spirit. You have advantage on saving throws to avoid paralysis or being stunned. And then the big one, Exalted Champion. So at 20th level, your presence on the field of battle is an inspiration to those dedicated to your cause. For 1 hour, You have resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage from non-magical weapons. Your allies have advantage on death saving throws while in 30 feet of you, and you have advantage on wisdom saving throws, as do your allies within 30 feet of you. So, yeah, you are just a leader on the battlefield. That's very much what I get from this final... you're the leader who leads from the front sort of thing.
Yeah. This would be another option for those of you who missed the warlord.
Yep.
Or if you like the idea of a samurai but want a little magic, this is a good way to get that too.
And then diving into Unearthed Arcana, so some playtest material. Firstly, we had an Unearthed Arcana dedicated to paladins that gave us two sacred oaths that, you know, wizards was all goody-goody two-shoes in the Player's Handbook and Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, but they know that those players are out there. What about a not necessarily very nice paladin? What if they feel like the Oath of Vengeance is too good? We've got the Oath of Conquest. So these are paladins who seek glory in battle and subjugation of their enemies. These guys, this seems very Ironborn to me, to borrow a term A Song of Ice and Fire. Just everything is about the battle and war. And then that's how you measure your worthiness as a paladin. So your tenets of conquest are douse the flames of hope. So it's not enough to just kill your enemies. You have to extinguish all hope from those around them. The little tagline they have for this tenet that I just love is a blade can end a life. Fear can end an empire. rule with an iron fist. So, you know, that just... put your boot on the back of people's necks and don't let them stand up tall. And strength above all. So this is the Sith code in a tenet. You shall rule until a stronger one rises. Then you must grow mightier and meet the challenge or fall to your own ruin.
Or if you've been diving really deep into Destiny lore lately like I have, it's also the sword logic of the Hive.
Oh, there you go. So some Oath of Conquest spells, Armor of Agathys, Command, Hold Person, Spiritual Weapon, Bestow Curse, Fear, Blight, Dominate Person, Insect Plague. So the first...
Warlock spells.
Yeah. The third and fifth level spells, it's like, okay, they're a little aggressive, but not too big a deal. And then you hit ninth level, and it's like, we're starting to get a little dark here. And then by 13th level, you're like, okay, I'm evil. So Channel Divinity, Conquering Strike. When you hit a creature with a melee weapon as part of your attack action, you can also use your Channel Divinity to force the target to make a wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, the target becomes frightened of you for 1 minute. And then Guided Strike, you can use your Channel Divinity to strike with supernatural accuracy. When you make an attack roll, you get a plus 10 bonus to the roll. You know, once again, we're seeing those plus a number to the roll instead of advantage, disadvantage. Although, honestly, I don't know how you replicate plus 10 with advantage.
Plus 10 is crazy.
Yeah. So, and then you have Aura of Conquest, where as long as you're not incapacitated, 10 feet from you in every direction, any enemy in your aura has disadvantage on saving throws against becoming frightened. Implacable Spirit, you can no longer be charmed. And then Invincible Conqueror. So, 20th level, for 1 minute, you have resistance to all damage. When you take the attack action on your turn, you can make an additional attack as part of that action, and your melee weapon attack scores a critical hit on 19 or 20. So, yeah, I mean, the title of that says it all, Invincible Conqueror. And then we have Oath of Treachery. So, if you think Oath of Conquest is just like, man, that seems kind of bad, but not bad enough, then we have Oath of Treachery. I mean, it's a good replacement if you want to play like the whole paladins need to stick with their oath and those tenets, and you have a player not doing that and they're okay with this. You can slap them with Oath of Treachery and kind of, without forcing them to drop their paladin levels, just change what kind of paladin they are. Because these are paladins out for themselves. They don't really serve anybody or anything. And as a result, they don't have any tenets. Their spells are Charm Person, Expeditious Retreat, Invisibility, Mirror Image, Gaseous Form, Haste, Confusion, Greater Invincibility, Dominate Person, and Pass Wall. So a lot of getting away with this.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they intend you to have many allies as this kind of paladin.
I guess we could say that conquest is lawful evil and trickery is chaotic evil.
Yeah, treachery is definitely chaotic evil.
Treachery, sorry.
No, you're good.
I was thinking, I said trickery because in my head I was thinking, oh, you could build a totally cool paladin of Loki.
Yeah.
With that.
And then for Channel Divinity, you have Conjure Duplicate. So you make an exact duplicate of yourself. and if you and your illusion are within 5 feet of each other, and both like fighting a creature, you have advantage on attack rolls against that creature because they don't know where the attack is going to come from. And then Poison Strike. So, as a bonus action, you touch one weapon or piece of ammunition and conjure special poison on it. It lasts for 1 minute, so 10 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
The next time you hit a target with an attack using that weapon or ammunition, the target takes poison damage immediately after the attack. It is 2d10 plus your paladin level, or just 20 plus your paladin level if you had advantage on the attack roll.
Wow.
You just get max damage. Like, jigabada. Then you have Aura of Treachery, which gives you a couple different things. Cull the Herd. You have advantage on melee attack rolls against a creature that has one or more of its allies within 5 feet of it. And Treacherous Strike. If a creature within 5 feet of you misses you with a melee attack, you can use your reaction to force the attacker to reroll that attack against a creature of your choice, also within 5 feet of the attacker. Level 15, Blackguard's Escape. Once again, just got to get away. You have the ability to slip away from your foes. After you are hit by an attack, you can use your reaction to turn invisible and teleport 60 feet away. You remain invisible until the end of your next turn or until you attack, deal damage. And yeah, just...
Wait, this is really just Loki. This is really just Tom Hiddleston playing Loki.
And then lastly, Icon of Deceit. So as an action, you can magically become an avatar of deceit for 1 minute. You are invisible. If a creature damages you on its turn, it must succeed on a wisdom saving throw or you control it for its next action.
I'm sorry. When you said that, I was thinking, what does an avatar of deceit look like? And you went, you're invisible.
Oh, like nothing. And then lastly, if you have an advantage on an attack roll, you gain bonus to its damage roll equal to your paladin level. So
just 20.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the, Oath of Treachery. I wanted to touch quickly on, not really dive too deep into it, because it seems like they came out with Oath of Treachery to kind of replace this, but we do have an oath in the Dungeon Master's Guide, which many people wouldn't look there. But once again, this is a good one for fallen paladins, but it's Oathbreaker. So Hellish Rebuke, Inflict Wounds, Crown of Madness, Dark. I mean, from the get go, this guy is not, you're not playing a good aligned person with this oath or lack thereof. Control Undead is one of your channel divinities. And then Dreadful Aspect is your other one. Aura of Hate. So, the paladin, as well as any fiends or undead within 10 feet of the paladin, gain bonus to melee weapon damage rolls. Not allies, just fiends and undead. Supernatural Resistance, you gain resistance to bludgeon, piercing, and slashing damage. And the 20th level is Dreadlord. The paladin can, as an action, surround himself or herself with an aura of gloom that lasts for a minute. It reduces any bright light within 30 feet to dim light. Whenever an enemy is frightened by the paladin, starts its turn in the aura, it takes 4d10 psychic damage. Additionally, the paladin and creatures he or she chooses in the aura are draped in deeper shadows. So you basically inflict disadvantage on attack rolls against you. The last oath to talk about,
which if you've been listening faithfully, you'll remember that we talked about this one not very long
ago. We're not going to dive too deep into it for two reasons. One, we've just talked about it. And two, we'll get to it in the build off. So Oath of Redemption. So this, like Philip and I said, we've gone over this. The tenets are peace, innocence, patience, wisdom. You get shield, sleep, hold person, ray of enfeeblement, counterspell. It's the pacifist paladin, which is such a cool concept. I was still so obsessed with it that I had to use it for my build off character. So yeah, we'll get deeper into that once we get into the build off. But yeah, if you don't remember what we said, go check out the previous episode and it's all there waiting for you. So that was a lot of oaths, a lot of talking.
Yes.
But before we get to the build off, which you've talked about a couple times, still got a couple things to talk about. So Philip, what do players need to remember when they're actually playing a paladin?
Well, we talked about this a little bit, so we don't need to get too hard into this part. But the oath, I think, is the big role playing thing for the paladin. Is you need to know what are the details of your oath, so you need to have worked that out. You need to know how dedicated your character is to that oath, and your character kind of has to be dedicated to that oath. But there are levels of that. You can be, you know, fanatical or not. Also, what limitations does the oath place on how your character actually acts? The oaths are all pretty deliberately vague to give you a lot of leeway, because that's a lot of what 5th edition tries to do. So how does the oath actually limit or affect the way your character acts? And how does it affect, most importantly, in my opinion, how does it affect the way your character interacts with other people, particularly the rest of your party?
Yeah, absolutely. We do this every episode before our build off, just some interesting concepts coming out of fiction for paladins. If you are your inspiration well has run dry and you need some help, really generic one is just the idea of the noble knight. Also Joan of Arc, I feel like, is a good example of a paladin. Thor came to mind to a certain extent.
I mean, he makes Thor work.
He is a god, but
yeah.
And maybe look to the ultimate Thor, where people weren't quite sure if he really was a god and his power was a little less like, oh, this is clearly the god of thunder. A character in Eberron Renewed is a soldier seeking redemption from his time in the war, just trying to get off of the path of the more martially minded serving a nation and serve a higher cause. Sir Galahad, pretty good generic individual from literature. Also, Jedi. The Jedi Knights, for the Star Wars fans out there.
Or the Sith, as we said. Yeah. The Oath of Conquest is pretty much just the Sith oath, the Sith creed.
Yeah. But, I mean,
one thing I had suggested here was, I think one cool thing about the Oath of the Crown is that it really stretches the meaning of a paladin. And so if you were, especially, and this is setting specific, but if you're playing an Eberron like us, then an agent of the King's Citadel, who's a King's Sword or a King's Shield, I think an Oath of the Crown paladin is a great option for that,
yeah,
to represent that mechanically.
Absolutely.
And then, as we said, if you miss the Avenger from 4th edition, then you got it. It's the Oath of Vengeance paladin. If you want to play if you're playing an evil group and you want to play the classic anti-paladin, then we've got some oaths now. We've got the conquest and treachery. And additionally, you've got the Oathbreaker from the DM's guide. And then if you're like me and you always really wanted to play in a campaign where there's a lot of stuff in the Feywild, then, or you really like Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, you want to play an elf paladin and you want it to feel like a wood elf paladin, because I know a lot of times paladin feels like a big on civilization and you're playing a wood elf and, well, how does it really work? Well, you got Oath of the Ancients there. So there's a lot of really cool concepts here, and they're pretty wide.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, those are just some general ideas for paladin inspiration. So we have come to the time in our programming for Le Build-Off.
So, indeed.
I can't remember who went first last time, Philip. So
I'll go first.
Okay.
So for this one, I have decided to just present my wife's paladin from my campaign. My wife plays a paladin, and she has based her character off of a piece of fiction that probably a lot of you haven't read, but there's a novel called Sabriel by Garth Nix. And in this world that he's created, there's a group of people whose job is to go around and re-dead the undead.
Interesting.
In the story, they're called Abhorsens. Kelly is calling it the Marshal in our game. But basically, your job is to go around and re-kill any undead encountered. So what Kelly has built is a paladin with the Oath of Vengeance and flavored it to attach it to the Raven Queen from the old 4th edition Pantheon, although they've begun to sort of introduce that into some of the Unearthed Arcana stuff, who's in service of the Raven Queen because the Raven Queen is big on the cycle of life and death and hates the undead. And she built a paladin of vengeance. So she has all of the things that you would expect with a vengeance paladin. She took the acolyte background to represent the fact that she's been training for this since birth, essentially, that she's essentially going to inherit the job from her father. For her skills, she picked up athletics, insight, perception, persuasion, and religion to represent the need to deal with people that comes along with this job, and also to, of course, understand a lot about the undead, hence the religion skill. There were a couple of things about the character that she wanted to represent, and so I allowed her to use the variant human, so she took a feat at first level that was magical initiate, and the first level spell she selected was find familiar, because in the story, the Abhorsen has a servant who is a weird magical creature bound into the form of a house cat. Now, Kelly's familiar, her character's familiar is a snowy owl instead of a house cat, but the same concept, and it's a pretty full character in its own right in our game. Mogget is the name of the character in the book. Her owl is named Archie because Kelly's a big T.H. White fan. So it's Archimedes, of course. And then her spell list, level 5, it included Chill Touch and Ray of Frost. Those were the two cantrips that she got for magical initiate because she wanted a couple of undead-related spells, because one of the things about the Abhorsens in the book is that they know a lot of necromancy. They just use it against the undead.
Interesting.
So she wanted to have a couple of necromantic spells to represent that. So she did Chill Touch and Ray of Frost. And then she has her paladin spells of Command, Divine Favor, Wrathful Smite, Hunter's Mark. For her two second level spell slots, she's got Lesser Restoration and Locate Option. Locate object.
I don't know what to do. I'm going to use locate option.
Locate option. And she based the spells that she uses off of the abilities of that character in that book pretty heavily. So I know this is kind of a lesser character, but it was an interesting build for her because the character in the book is much more of a wizard type with some martial abilities.
Yeah.
So much more of a spellblade or something like that kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
But she really doesn't like to manage large numbers of spells on her characters. And so we talked about it, and I had suggested a warlock or a paladin, as they were two ways we could build this with fewer spells, but still get the flavor of an undead hunter.
Yeah.
Essentially. And so that's what she wanted, was someone who hunts undead, and the Vengeance Paladin builds that really well. The tenants work really well because the Raven Queen is is an entirely neutral deity. And so you can totally work all the vengeance tenants about the greater good and restitution into that very easily.
Very cool.
So yeah, That's Kelly's paladin build.
Hmm. Well, my paladin build, I'm not using my wife's build, mostly because she doesn't have a paladin build. Or
I was going to say, you have not yet convinced your wife to play D&D.
But I decided to kind of, I don't want to say flex my muscles because I'm not showing off, but stretch myself outside of my comfort zone because I started building a paladin and was going very kind of dark, gruff, like toying with the idea of a paladin more in alignment than actual function. And I quickly corrected myself and went with something I feel like is pretty off the wall. His two highest scores with two 18s is charisma and dexterity.
Okay.
With strength being a dump stat.
Okay.
So he, his name is Cillian Thrask, or Killian, sorry, Killian Thrask, a half-elf paladin who has taken the Oath of Redemption. He used to be a pirate that would sail the seas and plunder and do all those piratey things, and has had a change of heart and realized that he's wronged many people and he is on the path to redemption. So this character I view is very much very heavily inspired by Guardians of the Galaxy. He is a fast talker, very irreverent, very chaotic, but just wants to use his words first. Like, go back to that final quote-unquote fight in Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, where it's just talking and dancing, and that's how he beats the big bad guy. That's Killian's deal.
Well, I mean, then they shoot him with a big rocket.
Well, that wasn't Star-Lord, though. Anyway, for his spells, because at fifth level you have six prepared spells, so I took Cure Wounds, Zone of Truth, Heroism, Detect Good and Evil, Aid, and Protection from Good and Evil. So he is just all about helping out people around him. Obviously, he is a pacifist. He doesn't want to fight. He wants to use his words. But because of his immensely high dexterity score, he does have an AC of 20 while wearing no armor. So he just walks around in clothes, looks like a normal dude, but you can't hit him. And this also allows him to go first in initiative order. So most of his actions in combat are going to be using charisma-based skills to try and talk enemies down, get them to go away. Because for his feat, he took the feat for the half-elf race, Everybody's Friend. So nice. For persuasion checks, his proficiency bonus is all of a sudden plus six instead of what it normally is. And then he also has insight and deception as his other skills that he is good with. So yeah, he's just a talker. Yeah, that's my paladin build. I wanted to build a paladin that was not a martially based fighter. He is the face of the party that can cast spells to, he's very close to a cleric. But once again, clerics wear heavy armor a lot of times and stuff. He walks around with no armor. He has a walking stick as a quarterstaff. If things get real crazy and he needs to use it, it's not going to be done very effectively because once again, his strength modifier is garbage. But yeah, that's my paladin build. Killian Thrask.
That's cool.
Former pirate I like that. Turned paladin. So yes, well, that is our episode over paladins. Please let us know over on the Facebook group or on the website or via email what you thought about this episode, what you thought about our build off, who you think made the better character, me or Philip's wife. Yeah, please let us know if you have any questions or comments. And we will respond to those. I wanted to make a note. I told Philip before the show, but just in case anybody who listened to the show was wondering, in our last episode, we were talking about options for your DM spellbook, and I brought up Scrivener, and Philip mentioned that it was a great desktop option, but was not sure if there were any mobile options for it. And Michael Bowman commented on the website letting us know that there is an iPad version of Scrivener. So if you like that on desktop and you would like to have it on the go on your tablet, there is an option out there for you. So thank you so much, Michael, for letting us know and educating us. So yeah, anything else you would like to say in regards to the Paladin or anything else, Philip?
No, I enjoyed doing this one. I think the Paladin is something that a lot of people who've played for a while tend to move on past because it seems limiting, but I think 5th edition has done a good job making it not so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I am Eric.
And I'm Philip.
And we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.